So why does it really matter what we sing and worship anyway? We've had worship wars, for sure, many generations of worship wars, between the contemporary and the traditional. So why does it really matter anyway? Consider this description of the importance of music. Music is powerful. It can excite, it can energize or calm and comfort. It can thrill you with its beauty or reduce you to tears. It can lift your mood after a bad day, invoke a memory from long ago, and get you tapping, swaying, and dancing when you least expect it. But music's ability to conjure emotions is only part of why it's so incredible. Music is a wonderful conduit for learning. When paired with movement and instruments playing, it creates neurological magic. It lights up the brain and positively impacts all areas of development. Music connects our emotions and our intellect, our heart and our head. When we study anthropology, we see that music is an inherent part of every society. The unearthly sounds of throat singing that we find in Mongolia and Siberia are as important to their cultures as Bach is to the cultures in Europe. Since music is such an important part of life, it should be an important part of our worship. And it's not really surprising that the Bible says a lot about music. We're going to take just a little thumb through the Bible and what it says about music. As early as Genesis, in Genesis 4:21, we have Cain's ancestry listed, and there we meet a man named Jubal. And he is the father of all who play harp and flute. And then we find when Moses led the Israelites across the Red Sea and they escaped from the Egyptians, Moses and the Israelites did what? They sang. And the women who were with Moses and Aaron sang along, right, with Miriam, their sister. Moses and Aaron's sister Miriam. And while they were singing, you know what else they had? Tambourines and dancing. And then we see the Israelites, when they return from battles victorious, what do? They sing. They celebrate. Worship was filled with singing. First Chronicles records that 1 in 10 of the Levite priests in the temple were musicians. So out of every 10 priests in the temple, one of them was a musician. Music was important. King David and King Solomon were both musicians. David wrote about half of the songs that we have in the book of Psalms in the Old Testament. Solomon is credited with two of them. And then, of course, Solomon wrote the Song of Solomon. First Kings says that King Solomon wrote 1,005 songs. In the Old Testament, music was a common part of life, partly because you could remember what you sang, right? And so we have in the Psalms all of the history of God being with his people, right? Because if you sing it, you can remember it. And then we have some Psalms that they're called, they're alphabet songs, basically. They start, the first verse starts with an A in Hebrew. The second verse starts with a bet, aleph, bet, gimel, dalet, the Hebrew alphabet. And so they remembered it because they had an alphabetical remembrance of how to keep up with the history of God's faithfulness to Israel. So they sang all the time because that's how you remember things. And they sang when people left. We see that with Jacob. They sang when somebody arrived. We see that with timbrels and dancing. People arrive and they celebrate that people arrive. When they were treading the grapes, what did they do? They sang. When they were in the field, it says they sang songs of joy. They sang when they went to war. They sang when they came back from war. And music and trumpets marked coronations. And fine singers were like fine food to royalty. They had them in their temple courts. And of course, they had harps and lyres and pipes and timbrels at their banquets. And when they had the tramping around Jericho, what happened as the walls fell? Trumpets, right? The trumpet blast. So that's all in the Old Testament. When we turn to the New Testament, does the music continue? It does. It does. Because when Jesus went to the man's home where he thought that his daughter had died, and he came to Jesus and he took him back, and Jesus said, "She's just asleep." When they got there, what was already happening there? The flute players were there with the mourners, right? And then when the prodigal son came home and the other son comes in from the field, what does he hear? The music, right? And Jesus and his disciples, after they have the Passover meal, they go out to the Garden of Gethsemane, and what do they do on their way? They sing. The Apostle Paul teaches that the church at Ephesus was being filled with the Spirit in singing to one another with psalms, hymns, and songs of praise. And he tells them to make music from your heart to the Lord. And the passage that we read this morning that Steve read from Colossians says that it's through our music that we teach and we admonish one another in wisdom. The people of God sing. We sing to praise. We sing to lament. We sing when we're joyful, and we sing when we're sorrowful. We sing. And one of the criticisms that I have, not just of our current hymn book, because I really, really love our current hymn book, but all of our hymns in general, we miss out as a people on lament. We just don't have good laments in our songs like we find in the book of Psalms. When we look in the book of Psalms, we have things like, "Answer me when I call to you, God. Give me relief from my distress." We don't have any songs that really say that, do we? We don't. We don't. We don't have any that say, "Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself when I have trouble?" But boy, could we use that, right? We don't have songs that say, "How long, O Lord?" When life gets hard, we need songs that allow us to sing to God, "How long? Will you forget me forever?" That's in Psalm 13. The new hymn book does have, I will say, every single psalm, all 150, in it. So we do have settings of every psalm text. But I believe we need new laments. Like the anthem that the choir sang this morning. You have the words on an insert in your bulletin. Our hearts contain truths. The song starts, that aren't flowery and poetic. There are truths, feelings, and experiences that we all have in life that we've hidden. And there just aren't words for them. They're tucked in our heart. They're tucked away. Those experiences that we just don't have words to describe. And in the absence of words, music is able to sigh and to soothe. It's able to wrap us in song. The poet of that anthem is Jane Griner, and the composer is Daniel Gawthrop. And they tell about being invited to hear a high school chorus sing that song. The chorus was coming to Washington, D.C., which is near where Jane and Daniel live, and so they invited them to come to their concert, which, of course, if you're singing a piece of music and you're coming close to where the writers of the piece of music live and you're a high school chorus, you want them to come and hear you sing, right? So they invited them, and the director had mentioned to them that one of the members of the choir had an illness that was fatal, and that Sing Me to Heaven had gained a particular place in the heart of these high school students because of their friend who was dying, and they would sing this song, and the director said, "We'd really love for you to come and hear us sing this song because it means so much to us." And Unfortunately, Jane and Daniel both looked at their calendars, and there was no way they could get there to hear them sing in concert. But they wanted it so badly, and Jane and Daniel could tell that they really, really, really wanted them to come and hear them sing this song. And so they worked it out to meet them at their hotel and for them to sing it in the hotel lobby. And Daniel tells about it. He says, "We arrived at their big downtown hotel a little later than we wanted to, Washington, D.C. traffic, and rushed into the lobby to find all of the students in the lobby, along with the usual noisy, bustling crowd that inhabits a large lobby in a big city. And so we hurried our greetings because we were running late anyway, and we made introductions, and they were already in a circle, and we were told by the director that we were just going to experience what happened every day at their rehearsal. And so we were escorted by a beautiful, delicate young woman and put right in the center of the students, and all of the students were in a circle facing each other. And they started singing without the director. In my heart's sequestered chambers lie truths stripped of poet's gloss." And he says the lobby of the hotel went silent as people stopped to listen. The young lady in the circle with us was dying. She knew it, and the students knew it. And unable to cure her, they had come up with this daily ritual as the only healing that they could offer. He says it was heartbreakingly beautiful and profoundly moving. Music allows us to connect, not just with the story of the performer or the story of the composer or the poet. It allows us to connect with our story. It gives us words when we don't have words. And so the people of God sing. Karl Barth, arguably the greatest Reformed theologian of the 20th century, said of music and worship, "The Christian church sings. It is not a choral society. Its singing is not a concert, but from the inner material necessity, it sings. Singing is the highest form of human expression. What we can and must say quite confidently is that the church which does not sing is not the church. And where it does not really sing, but sighs and mumbles spasmodically," I love that, "where it does not sing, but sighs and mumbles spasmodically, shamefacedly, and with an ill grace, it can be at best only a troubled community which is not sure of its cause and of whose ministry and witness there can be no great expectation. The praise of God, which finds its concrete culmination in the singing of the community, is one of the indispensable forms of the ministry of the church. It's through song that we tell our story. We express our faith. We rehearse the biblical story. And to a very real degree, our faith is formed. And so it's important that our hymns do say what we believe, that they express the range of our experiences from great joy to deep lament, that we sing songs of thanksgiving and praise, as well as songs of prayer and dedication. And that the diversity of all the family of God in all times and places is represented. We need hymns from all over the world. And we need hymns that are new and hymns that are old. We need hymns that the young like to sing and hymns that the oldest people among us are connected to. We need hymns that we've never sung before because they force us to hear again truths that we hadn't considered before. And we need hymns that we have sung all our lives because they connect us to our deep roots in faith. Psalm 96 that we read this morning and "Sing Me to Heaven" that the choir sang are both pieces that were commissioned. Psalm 96 was commissioned. It was a psalm commissioned for the annual festival of the enthronement of the Lord. So when the church year rolled around every year at the temple, they wanted to have a really fantastic celebration. I think of it kind of like Pentecost. It was the enthronement of the Lord Sunday. And so the priests would get together and try to figure out what they were going to do together that was really going to make this worship spectacular. And not just spectacular in a lights going off and everybody amazed kind of way, spectacular in a way that transformed people's hearts and people's lives. And so every year they commissioned a new song. And so Psalm 96 starts with, "Sing a new song to the Lord." The commissioning of Sing Me to Heaven came from a community chamber choir. The director wanted something that spoke to the way that singers feel about music in their lives. And so when Daniel Gawthrop was commissioned to write the piece, he says, "I looked around and I couldn't find anything that was a text that fit the commission." And so he approached Jane Grimer, a poet, to write something new. And this is what she said. She said, "I thought about it. And I realized that music comforts us. When we're very young, someone sings us a lullaby." I imagine most of you know a lullaby or two. And when you think of that lullaby, it connects to all sorts of other memories, doesn't it? And when we're in love, sing me a love song. We've all turned on the radio and heard that song that reminded us of a time when we were falling in love. And when we've lost someone, sing me a requiem. Sing me to God. It all seems to add up, she says, to sing me to heaven. The book of Revelation, we didn't include in our little thumb through the Bible. It describes heaven. God is seated on the throne and he's holding a scroll that nobody can open. Nobody on earth, nobody in heaven, nobody under the earth can open it because nobody's worthy to open it. And at the center there by the throne is the Lamb who appears to have been slain. And the Lamb takes the scroll from the right hand of God. And as he takes the scroll, Revelation says that four creatures and 24 elders fall on their knees, and they're each holding two things. They have a harp, and they have a golden bowl that is filled to the brim with incense. Beautiful scent. And that incense is the prayers of all of God's people. And you know what they're doing as they fall on their knees? They're singing. And as they sing a new song, Revelation says they're joined by angels encircling them, numbering thousands upon thousands, 10,000s upon 10,000s, singing, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain." And John says, "Then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and on the sea and all that is in them singing, to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb, be praise and honor and glory forever and ever. On earth and in heaven, the people of God sing." And our song connects us to our emotion and our intellect, our hearts and our heads. Our song connects our story to the story of God through all generations. And our song is part of the music of heaven as every creature in heaven and on earth sings praise to God. Thanks be to God. Amen.